This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jimmy hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Together we move fast, trying to grow up slow. Our hopes were high, our overhead was low. They all told me you weren't the only one I'd ever find. We had road ahead, miles behind.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here, your old friend P2 on the P2 Podcast, coming to you live from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my cozy studio here in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas. It is a beautiful day outside. We are talking all things music. Showing you through the fog, through the incoming mist in your entertainment music lives as you struggle to see above the clouds, to see through the mist, through the hail, through the snow and sleet. Where is it headed? Are we going to go to concerts anymore? Are we going to buy CDs? Is vinyl really coming back? Phil, what do you think? You're out there trying to survive. And indeed I am. Surviving and thriving, folks. We are very excited today. One of my good friends is here. Someone who is a friend to me and a friend then to all Pritchettdom out there and all music fans out there, because there is no bigger music fan in the world than Kevin Haggard, who joins us here. He's in from Houston, Texas. How you doing, Kevin?
Excellent, Phil. Happy to be here today. This is one of the crowning achievements of my life.
Isn't
to
it?
Be on a podcast with Phil Pritchett.
Talking about music, your favorite thing.
Talking about music and following in esteemed podcast individuals like Kurt South.
Oh, just to name one. Zach Huckabee. Jason Stolle was here.
Jason Stolle. I don't even know if I can follow that.
Measure up.
No.
Well, we're going to encourage you to do so. The reason you're thinking, man, who is this? Kevin Haggard. What? First of all, you've probably seen him on the front row at a lot of shows, Pritchett shows, lurking, selling merch, perhaps, at the Firehouse Saloon. He made his name originally and totally under the radar as a world-renowned financial banker in world finance for years and years. Is that safe to say?
That would be safe to say.
But your real passion, your real moonlighting job, of course, you know his work, ladies and gentlemen, as the inventor of P2 Tunes, of PhilPritchett.com, of P2 Merch, all these little web idiosyncratic things.
Don't forget Trinidad World
TrinidadWorldRecording.com. Haggard does the websites. When you have trouble with your download and you email me, I just sit there, I shed a tear, I'm so sorry for the inconvenience, and then I just forward that email to Kevin Haggard and say, help this guy out. And Kevin writes him a very nice email. Some of you folks out there, you don't know that when you download this, you downloaded the album, where is it, they say? Is it on the desktop? Did they put it somewhere? Is it already in my iTunes? Where is it?
And I Kevin magically can show figure you the that way. Out.
He right. magically figures it out. Always looking for solutions. Always looking for solutions, an easier way for me as an artist to communicate directly with the fans. And Kevin, who's a fan, how many albums do you have? Just giving people some scope of how much music you own and entertain and store and listen to. What is it now? How many albums would you say you have purchased or attained in your life?
It's hard to classify albums anymore because they now just reside on your hard drive. I mean, I think I probably stopped somewhere in 1,500, 2,000 CDs.
Actual CDs.
But then there's all the live shows. I love a good recording of a live show.
Yeah.
Those are all over the internet.
You download stuff here and there off any sites that have live archive.org, whatever. They
archive.org,
got a
great source for Phil Pritchett live material for those of you looking.
Well, Kevin was the person who I had literally sent live CDs. God, those old great stuff, the Scruffy Murphys and the Firehouse and the entire Poor David show, some of which went on to the Cool and Unusual Punishment album.
Archive.org and search for Phil Pritchett. They're all there.
Archive.org. And, man, it's free. You can sit there and stream it, listen to it, or you can download the whole thing.
And the amazing thing is on that site, some of those shows that you have up there have 5,000 plus downloads.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I'm like, where are the sales on this deal? I don't know where that happens.
It doesn't matter. There's 5,000 downloads. It's worth something.
Man, well, we have the show today then is going to, you know, as anybody who listens to the show wants to know where Phil Pritchett, you know, music is headed and music in general. We love talking all things technology to give some sort of guiding light to people out there looking for great music, you know, and dealing with all the change in the business. So many of the topics on the podcast come directly from Kevin emailing me something he read in an article. Hey, read this article in the Wall Street Journal or something on Tech Dirt, something on Wired. Hey, interesting interview with this dude who's a you know, indie music guy from Maine or something and sold 14,000 T-shirts in one day off his Twitter page or something. Amanda Palmer or something. You know,
exactly.
People like that, always very interesting, man. I just eat it up. You introduced me to Bob Lefsetz, the Lefsetz letter that you all need to read. If you haven't, shame on you. Get with the program, the Lefsetz letter, Lefsetz, and read Bob. He'll send you an email once a day with some great thought-provoking idea and let you on the inside.
Or four times a day, five times a day,
depending on how he's doing.
Well, the amazing thing is how much information is out there. So whether you're in the music business, the food processing business, the car business, it doesn't matter. There is information out there that you should be reading and absorbing, because essentially you're learning on the back of all these other individuals.
Yeah, and your competitors are reading too, you would think. Or maybe they're not. It gives you an advantage to be up on what's going on.
No, exactly. I mean, if someone told you the secret to your success is out there on the internet, go find it. Well, I would go look, because it's a chance to get ahead based on someone else's experience. The Amanda Palmer experience is great. How she hooks up with all these fans on Twitter, they send her money.
Yeah, that's right.
What's better than that?
Yeah, what's driving that? It's something we always try to do with our sites, with our shows, you the fans. That's the reason we do the podcast, just to, you know, show yet another little side of what we're doing. What's been interesting to you lately? I'm always asking you, man, what could we do better on the site? What else could we do? What are we trying to get done these days?
Well,
have you been reading? Where are we falling behind?
Well, I think the element of targeting the fan and getting the fans that are listening to this, how do we get them the information they need to make decisions on attending shows, buying merchandise, getting the new album, which is out now, Mark of the Human Hand. You can find it on P2Tunes and dropcards.com.
Before it's released anywhere, of course.
It's how do you make sure your fans get the information they need.
And get the service that they want.
Correct.
Get access to an album first and all, you know, that kind of stuff.
And part of that is making a compelling homepage. I think it all starts from there. That's your landing site. PhilPritchett.com. That's your name. That's your ultimate corporate branding. So if someone goes there, how do they get the rest that they need? How do they get to archive.org to get the live shows? How do they get to your Twitter feed? How do they get to your podcast feed? How do they get news? How do they get concert dates? All that should be there, not in a mess. And hopefully, I'm not a graphic designer by trade, but hopefully we've presented something that makes the information easily accessible to the fans.
Intuitive. You just click a click away. Gosh, I went on to my, and I don't mean to insult my old alma mater. We're playing Southwestern University, my old school in Georgetown, rolling through the Georgetown countryside, inspiration there. Went to school down there, so I'm playing the homecoming thing coming up here, and they said, man, just go to our website. And I almost started laughing on the phone. I mean, they're very, very nice, but they said, well, go to our website. I said, okay, where is it? So I go there. They said, see where it says news? I'm like, okay. So click there. I click and something else comes up. It's a bunch of text, you know. I'm just, okay, just go down to where it says alumni ideas. I go, okay, and I click there, and then something else comes up. I'm just trying to find like where a building is on campus. I'm just like, what is it? And dude, everything I had, I'm like, this is the design looked great, But I was like, man, if she went on the phone with me, man, I've lost interest here.
I spent 15 minutes trying to find
it. Skipped through. I'm like, what? I'm just, shouldn't they just? Then I hit, oh, here's a map of the campus. Map. Then, oh, it was in some kind of a spreadsheet download form. I'm like, there's not just a map here I can look at. You got to be kidding me. Or it takes you to a Google map page and I got to enter the, it's just something like that.
Well, I feel sorry for them.
That's the opposite of what we try to do.
They have so much information. I mean,
they think
of how much they're trying to present. I mean,
that's right.
For us to put Phil Pritchett out there and to hit the five, six things that are important.
It's a simple process.
It's a little simpler. But, you know, I give all the credit in the world to proper web designers and guys who do that as a living.
It is hard, though, to get that information where you're trying to find it. Of course, and really what I was trying to find was something very specific. So you just, it was a long process. I was like, good grief, I just got lost in cyberspace there, wandering around.
Well, so it is about getting the information to people. I think that's the key thing. The internet is great because it lets people get information, but it also lets people get too much information. So how do they filter it out? And this folds out into selecting the music you're going to listen to. Mm-hmm. There's so much music out there. There's iTunes, there's Spotify, there's Groove Shark, La La, all these different music services.
Sure.
You can get, you know, the world of music at your fingertips in seconds. But how do you choose?
That's right. Yeah. What are the filters? Of course, the old filters were radio, MTV. Right.
Billboard charts.
You kind of say, hey, this guy's number one. You got to check it out. Or, you know, the billboard on the side of the highway I always talk about. The new Def Leppard album in the 80s. You're like, wow, I got to get in the know. I got to get this thing. And how all those filters are now not trusted. And it's just this, you know, there's just this sense of chaos and anarchy in music. And you don't, you know,
Chaos comes from having everything available.
Yeah, that's right. And it's, I find myself obsessed with Bob Dylan's little musings or something like that, or some interview with him online, or reading about how Martin Sexton goes on stage with just him and a guitar and tours the country and sells out theaters. And you don't see him, you don't hear him on the radio, you don't see him on anywhere.
But he probably has a thriving website community
or fans. He does. And even though I couldn't tell you one of his songs, which I'm ashamed to say, his music, people, I'm always kind of like, Bob Schneider's that way with me, the great Austin musician. I consider myself a big fan of Bob, but I really don't know his music very well. I've never bought any of his music, never paid to see a show. But just the idea of what he is appealing to me, and I follow it. And I talk to people about him. People who went and saw him and said, man, what kind of show did he do? Man, he had this cool thing. He has, you know, where you can buy his concert immediately after the show on CD. Or, you know, he did a different kind of show. He did kind of a scabs thing, or he did a solo thing, or he made an album in one day and put it on his MySpace page, and all that. It's funny that, I mean, I'd like to get your two cents on this. It's almost like the idea of, if you don't have the big hit, the iTunes single that just downloads 4 million times and you make that cash or whatever. Short of that, what you have to have, it seems like to me, the idea of the act has to be presented and has to be bigger than any of their songs or albums. The idea of the band is paramount. I feel like we're going to talk about U2 again and their
Brand.
Difficulty.
Really,
it's
what
the
it
brand.
Is.
And, you know, as big as U2 is or some band like that, or the Stones, there's never, oh, they're just nothing without that one song. Or, you know, they got their big songs, but the idea of what the Stones are or U2 or even like the White Stripes, you know, or Wilco. There's no one song that eclipses Wilco that they've recorded. It's just, you like the idea of Wilco. They've got this loft in Chicago. It's cold. They're up there recording some masterpiece on 2-inch tape, and now they're touring. And the idea of the band is what sells you on the whole thing. It's not really so much the songs individually. You think that's safe to say?
It's, you know, I was at business school, and the school I was at specialized in marketing. What this is an exercise in consumer marketing. It's no different than
why does
someone select a Harley Davidson? Why does someone eat shredded wheat? It's they associate with the idea of
what it
that
represents
brand
for themselves. Yeah.
So, you know, to tie it back to Phil Pritchett, what is the Phil Pritchett brand?
I have no idea. You're asking me.
What do we? Well, I think the answer is pretty easy. It's similar to like a drive-by truckers or just honest rock and roll, straightforward. You're not a sellout.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be number one on the, you know, Shane Media Texas music
chart.
Right,
right, right.
But you're going to go out there. You're going to give an honest, good 2-hour-plus show. It's rock and roll.
Some people are going to turn up, you know, and it's...
And you're going to have a good time. And I think the brand that people identify with is it's an honesty.
Right.
And it's a hardworking, and right. It's a rock and roll.
And it's independent. It's not filtered from a...
it's not a media conglomerate.
Well, people should know that I'm not. I've had people say, you know, they know that there's not some other producer that's gotten their claws in me. That oh, he's doing this record, Phil's doing this album just to get on the radio. And he's trying to broaden his. None of it is made.
That's certainly not. That's certainly not the brand.
No, it's just made by Phil for the fans, and that's it. And I want people to have that sense when they come to a show or download something that. You'll hear a lot of artists say unabashedly, thinking they're saying the right thing, say, well, man, we made this new record. Yeah, it doesn't sound like our live shows, but, you know, we're trying to get radio play, and that's what it's all about. That's what this business is all about. It's what I'm all about, is growing my deal and getting on the radio. And, man, as a fan, that would just insult me when I heard one of my of course, none of the artists I really like would ever say something like right. that. But I do hear guys say that a lot, thinking, man, it's all about selling records or it's all about this. And if you know me, Phil, fans out there, I want people to just take total ownership in what I'm doing, to just say, man, I emailed Phil, he emailed me back. I downloaded his record, I checked it out, I emailed him and said, hey, I love this one song, and he emailed me back and said, thanks, and I mentioned to him at the next show I was at, and he kind of remembered. He said, oh, yeah, you know, you said you liked that one song, or were you the guy who was interested in us playing his wedding, and I couldn't believe he remembered. I want that part of it, you know, that feels like that there's no disconnect, that when they hear a song, see a show, it's not like you're just, the access is denied there, that they have a stake in it. Every little $4 download keeps that thing running.
I think the $4 download is huge, right? I mean, you think of you're trying to connect with the fans.
It took me a while for you to come around on that, if I recall.
Well, to put it, I mean, that site we put together, and I think it launched February 2007.
P2Tunes.com.
All right, selling it at $4, that was outrageous at the time. Now you go on Amazon.
Outrageous. Oh, yeah.
And iTunes, everyone's selling it for
I was just dog cussed by the musicians. You're making all of us look bad. Like I've got some laundry list of gigantic sales. I'm like, yeah, what do you care? But it did give a lot of people pause. A lot of these Texas country guys used to selling CDs on LoneStarMusic.com for $17.99. And here's Phil over here selling his stuff off his website for $4.
Well, that was you trying to put it in the hands of the fans. I mean,
yeah, that's right.
That is
saying,
the,
you know,
honesty saying,
it.
Hey, I want you guys to have this.
Right.
I mean, I
got
to make a little money, but I really want you to. And look at the MP3s on your site.
Yeah.
If someone doesn't have the $4, they can go and download 36 free songs from your website.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, you want people to have the music, and I think that resonates and that connects to people.
I hope it does. And we don't ask for an email address or anything to download. You can just click away.
Just go take them. Click the banner at the top of the page. It says free MP3s. Go to that page on philpritchett.com. And it's the hits. We're not giving you the bottom track of Heritage Way. We're giving you the good
Maria
stuff.
And
Maria
Skywalker.
Song of the Doorman. I mean,
it's
good stuff.
Go get it, man. Well, I think that's what it's all about. And you've been very influential in the way I've marketed myself. All that set up. So that's why Kevin is on the show today, folks. Plus, man, you know what? We traded in. I turned in my old key at the La Quinta down there in Houston, Texas. You know what I'm talking about. Haggard has a moved back to Houston from Chicago. He's in Chicago for a little while working.
2 years.
Yeah, years ago.
2 long years.
Oh,
yeah.
But man, he's finally gotten his home there in Houston, his beautiful home, his beautiful family all set up. But over the garage, he's built an oasis there in Houston, a bungalow, if you will. Was that what you'd call it?
I kind of call it urban retreat.
An
for
urban
musicians.
Retreat?
Yes.
So, man, every time I come into Houston now, I drop the band. Although I've taken them with me a couple times over there. But like, the band will stay at a hotel. Then give everybody their own space and stuff. I go to Kevin's house, and I've got my own little room there at the house above the garage.
And you're not
Fantastic.
Afraid of the neighborhood?
No, of course not. It's
I
beautiful.
Think some people have said the neighborhood is a little sketchy in the past.
Yeah, who did say that?
That was Blake Walker.
Blake Walker? Blake Walker. Yeah, he kind of goes, it's over there in the hood, man. I'm like, it's not the hood. I go, flood. Haggard lives over there. It's
beautiful area.
Beautiful area. So, man, we love going to Houston. Every time you see me at the firehouse, everyone knows our shows at the firehouse are usually supercharged and a lot of fun. It has a lot to do with the fact that I've just been at Kevin's house in my bungalow. I've had a hot meal, a hot shower. I've watched some HD ESPN or something. I'm just ready to go, ready to rock and roll. It does a lot for me.
That's all I'm trying to do. It's selfish for me. I'm just trying to have a good show.
Trying to have a good show. That's right. Well, we are going to have more with Kevin Haggard. More thoughts on where his music is headed. Oh, man, forgive us. Forgive us, fans. U2 just gets kicked under the bus on every podcast. They're so out there right now.
I'm not sure if this is kicking under the bus this time.
No, it's not kicking them under the bus. I feel like we talk about them a lot, but you know, there's really not a lot of dudes out there like that anymore. The Stones, McCartney aren't touring. You've got U2 rolling in town. And then just a million theater acts. It's a dinosaur in its last legs, maybe. You sense something about this U2 tour. Like, you might not see a tour like this may never tour again.
It's like the last days of the Roman Empire.
Man, that's my sense of it.
Yep.
You're kind of like, if the Stones were smart, the Stones were smart. Now, if they wait 10 years till they're all 78 and then tour, they could probably do stadiums. But if they try to go out next summer, they'd probably be better off doing American Airlines Center, arena-type deals. They probably couldn't pull off the stadium deals as much. They've toured so much recently. Springsteen, same deal. The Rose Bowl. With the spaceship out there. I mean, when are you going to see something like that again? Pink Floyd is not coming back, man.
I hope never.
Zeppelin's never coming back. So you're just like, man, who is it? Who is it? You know, is Wilco going to be big enough in 10 years that they're going to sell out the Rose Bowl?
Our Kings of Leon, the Killers.
I don't know. I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. Do you?
No. Well, we can get in the next segment, perhaps, but I think it comes more from just a legacy of, you know, people our age.
Yeah.
What do we remember from a golden era of stadium rock?
That's right. That's right. We're going to look more at the future of the live experience. U2's streaming of the Rose Bowl show online, which was very cool. Talk about that. Also want to talk a lot about Spotify, getting a lot of press with Leftsits and things, but still very underground. A lot of people don't know what it is. We're going to talk about Spotify, streaming music on demand. Is it the future? We'll talk about that in our next segment coming up.
Never be called my own, 'cause you've got nothing when you're alone. Town steeple always ring on time, demanding the hours.
Welcome back, folks, fans, Romans, countrymen. Lend me your ears, Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast, talking with our tech guru, the man behind all Phil Pritchard media websites, and a man on the cutting edge of technology.
And this very own podcast as well.
And this very own podcast, a man who just uploads and keeps the stream rolling, keeps you informed. The man with his finger on the trigger of all things Pritchett, reaching the fans. Kevin Haggard is here. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Oh, happy to be back for the second segment. You didn't kick me out after the first.
No. Excellent stuff. Well, we kind of touched on the, you were talking about a recent show you went to, Drive-By Truckers. And,
yep.
House of Blues. Great show. We all love the Drive-By Truckers.
Oh, just incredible.
Fans of the full band, I'm glad to say, evidently.
You're telling me that they gave you a shout-out in Fort Worth?
Well, they played, of course, I've always known the Drive-By Truckers. I know their songs. I'm not just the world's biggest fan, but, again, the idea of who they are, I love the whole thing. And they played, I think it must have been the Ragweed Red Dirt deal. Here in Fort Worth. So I'm just sitting at home one night when this thing's going on. And, dude, all of a sudden, I just start getting text messages. Ding, 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 ding. From Kurt and Colin Keaton and people. Just Drive-By Truckers on stage talking about P2. Talking about shout out to P2, Drive-By Truckers. Holy shit. You know, and I'm just like, whoa, what? So I didn't know what was happening. So it was pretty
clearly
cool.
A great band then.
Great band. Yeah, great band with great taste. No question. So I was very flattered needless to say, that they said something like, "Boy, this is Fort Worth, Texas, man, the home of Phil Pritchett and the full band. We're fans." They said something like that on stage. Everybody kind of cheered, you know. Anyway, I hope some of them cheered. Anyway, that's how the story was told to me. So I was thrilled to hear that you were going to go see them at the House of Blues a few nights ago. But you did have your some misgivings about maybe the show, the atmosphere. Stolly was talking about how he went to Wilco and was a little beaten down. A little bit, you know, love the show, but a little beaten down. How'd you come in? How do you come in? You who see how many shows a year? Oh, man.
Let's say
a few a month.
North of 50.
North of 50, yeah.
Let's say north of 50. And And I think it, you know, as you get older, you want to just sit down more and just listen and absorb.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's something that, you know, makes you feel alive about being at a live show. It's the music's in your face. There could be mistakes. There's people moving around you. It's, you know, there are 300 fans there in front of the stage singing out the words to the song, pumping their fists. I think the band was reacting. There's a magical element of being at a live show when you feel the audience connecting to the music. And you tell me, I mean, you're on the
sure.
other side.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's, you feel like you're connecting. You're all moving as one. You're all there to, you know, to really enjoy the show together.
It's a communal experience.
It's a communal experience.
That's right.
And I had a great time. I mean, more than 2 hours, two or three encores. Just I came in with a great feeling about Patterson Hood, the lead singer.
Yeah.
You know, how he leads that band, how they put things together. But then I come home and I think, well, you know what? What's my other option? I just turn on YouTube.
Yeah.
And watch YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, do I get that same experience? No, I've just had someone rock my face off.
That's right. That's right.
Drinking beers. It's a little sweaty. It's that you can't replace.
Mm-mm.
I think there's a difference between a House of Blues, which is 1,000 seats.
Uh-huh.
You know,
is the one in Houston? I've never been in that one.
It's very similar to the one in Dallas, I think.
Is there the big room, then maybe a small room somewhere?
Big room, small room.
Okay.
The decks,
tiers,
the foundation. I think it's a big corporation at this point.
Is it downtown?
They pretty much lay it out. Yeah, downtown in a new development in Houston.
I keep waiting for them to just go under. You know,
Live Nation, you know. I mean,
anything that big. Yeah, that's right. They're part of Live Nation. It's tough, man. It's tough to find places, people to fill those rooms. But then again, like we talked about on the podcast, you forget about the collective souls of the world that go in there and sell it out. So, you know, and you're just like, what? You
know, Bob Saget's of the world doing stand-up there November 20th.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm putting an ad in. But
is that right?
The tickets are going fast for Bob Saget.
Bob Saget, yeah, man. Good grief. Or, you know, we opened up that show in the big room in House of Blues in Dallas for Cowboy Mouth.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, Cowboy Mouth, are they still around? I mean, I knew they were playing, a great band. And, man, that place was packed to the rafters, man. I mean, the balcony, the floor, slammed. I couldn't believe it, man. I thought, I mean, they'll probably have 600, 700, 800 in here, maybe. And, dude, they probably had about 1,500 in there. Very impressive.
Well, I think that's...
There are bands out there who can bring out 1,000 people. I think it's the rule of thumb. Maybe not a lot that can do 50,000, like we're talking about U2 at the Rose Bowl. But there's probably more bands who can do 1,000. You know, the Doobie Brothers played Bass Hall the other night. It holds about 2,000 people. They said sold out weeks in advance, slammed to the gills. You know, as did Ray Price and Roy Clark the other night, sold out Bass Hall. So the smaller venue, I think, maybe as there are, like you say, so many more acts now, so much choice, rather than having one concert where you think there's going to be 80,000 people show up. Is that a thing of the past? Talking about you two, you know, is there someone who will be that big, that ubiquitous, that we just
good
have
word.
To... There it is. Good word. Good word. To where we all have to go to the show. I don't know the answer.
Is it
a dying thing?
I think it's got to be a dying thing because...
The festivals have risen. How many? There's millions of festivals now
yeah.
where you do have 80,000 people, but maybe like 40 bands, you know, like ACL or something like that.
Right, or Ziegfest.
Yeah, right. But I'm talking one act with an opening band. I mean, I saw the Stones at the Cotton Bowl with Living Color opening, and that was the show. And there we all were, all 90,000 of us or whatever it is. Ridiculous. That was 89.
What level of intimacy did you feel there?
I don't know.
I think if you go back to the base level of what music is, trying to connect to people, you know, there's a size limit to a venue where you don't connect anymore.
Right, right.
So House of Blues, you're still connecting to the fans. So I feel like there's always going to be room for that House of Blues type experience, 1,000-seat, 1,500-seat venues.
Right, right, right.
Because you can still connect.
Right.
I think once you start to get a 10,000-seat arena, you know, are people just going to say they went, and at some point spending $200 just to say you went to a show is going to lose its cachet pretty
That's
quickly.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of competition in that size of market these days. You know, we started playing in Dallas at, you know, Poor David's Pub down on a Lower Greenville. We played at the Gypsy Tea Room in their, like, 300-person room in there. Those were kind of our haunts, you know. And those
things, great venues, by the way.
Great venues. And but they're both no longer there. Poor David's moved. The Tea Room closed. And, you had the Granada Theater open. Well, the Granada Theater is about 1,000 people. Now, we've headlined in there, but that's a big space to fill, the Granada right. Theater. And then, man, you had Gillies, the huge room at Gillies, opened the Palladium. So now they have a 2,000, this is where Stolle saw Wilco, about an 1,800, 2,000 person room. The Shins, Wilco.
It's kind of the Verizon in Houston. Those
Vince
downtown,
Neil, yeah. Vince Neil solo tour would go to the Palladium. And then what else do you have in Dallas now? You've got the House of Blues has right. opened downtown that we've played. And you get Cowboy Mouth and Amy Mann and bands that can draw maybe in that 500 to 1,500 range. And there seems to be a lot of bands who can bring them in, you know?
I think the corporate excess of paying huge fees to some of these bands like an Amy Mann or, right. or who would get huge upfront payments, you know, in the early
sure.
2000s.
Right.
I think they've reset their expectations, as has everybody. I mean, there's always periods of corporate excess.
Well, Reynolds went to that show, our friend John Reynolds, to Amy Mann. You know, he said it was pretty modest. I mean, it was like a $25 ticket, $30 ticket. He goes, man, it was probably about $300 in there. It wasn't, and there had tables. It was more of a, so a lot of times it's not what it seems. I always joke about we get a lot of mileage when we play the House of Blues or Billy Bob's just because of the advertising these venues do is so huge that there's almost a value in, you talk about how many people paid did we have? Well, we had X number of people paid, but then you think how many unpaid, I think that was Jason Stolle's line. I go, but there's an additional, there's a lot of people who come up to me months after a House of Blues date and go, dude, I saw you playing the House of Blues. Oh my gosh. I couldn't make it that night, but my gosh. Amazing. Congratulations on all your success.
You're still around, Phil.
Well, because the advertising was, they saw it in a paper somewhere. They were driving by the venue. It's on the marquee, whatever. There is a lot of, subsidiary benefit to playing those bigger rooms.
Right.
Harder to make money, but there's a lot of competition. There was a article about the Ridgely Theater. There's a kind of a Granada Theater-esque up on Camp Bowie,
yeah.
and how it's kind of going out of business, that they think you're going to be shutting it down. And they had a Sunvolt show in there last year, but mainly a lot of like local heavy metal bands, because they'll draw 500, 600, 700 people to those shows, but it's kind of hurt the culture of having a venue like that open. It
right.
just became known as kind of a metalhead place. And a lot of competition in there. Probably not a lot of competition on the Rose Bowl level, though, these days.
Yeah, to circle back to you two, it was fascinating to think that I can sit at home, watch that concert live.
You sent me the link the next day.
It was live, and Lefsis, it was the next
Lefsis
day.
Lefsis was writing about it. He's been in L.A. is all a buzz about you two tonight. I'm going to the show. I'm sitting in traffic. He was writing about his deal. And then I know that night, and then you sent me the link like the next morning. Here's the show. I'm like, what?
In HD.
I sat there and watched the whole thing. Here's Bono. I mean, this happened last night. That was pretty cool.
It was cool. But if you take it to its very illogical extreme,
and seemed very,
why would you go when you have the, you know?
And it seemed very un-U2 like, in that it was sort of a freebie.
We're collecting money off.
Well,
it,
why? Yeah. Yeah. Well, why wouldn't they wait and release the Rose Bowl DVD or something like that?
Or if YouTube paid them cash or something to broadcast it over YouTube?
Maybe so.
There were some ads on the page where the concert was playing.
There had to. It was a cool thing because yeah. I was reading about Lefsitz going to the show, you know, the Rose Bowl, the weather was going to be great. And some of these indoor venues they're doing, like out at Jerry World here in the Cowboys, the scoreboard, they had to move the stage more to the north part of the field because it wouldn't quite fit under the scoreboard like they thought it was going to.
And Bono wasn't allowed to punt.
yeah, wasn't allowed to punt it off the screen. But the sound, they said, was a little weird in there because you had a dome. And
right.
So the Rose Bowl... Well, I mean, it's open air, beautiful weather. There's plenty of room for the big spider spaceship, whatever the hell they had out there. Bono to spin around on the chain or whatever he had going on. And so that was the quintessential show. But then they just broadcast it for free. Pretty amazing.
It makes you think next time if there's another U2 tour, and there probably will be, that you'll
sure.
get the 2011 extension of the world tour.
Right.
You might think to yourself, you know what? I'm not going to spend $400 on tickets.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm going to buy a $100 bottle of wine, mm-hmm. sit at home with my wife, we'll hook the laptop up to the 55-inch HD television, sit in the living room.
Enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show with a nice bottle of wine. We don't have to park. We don't have to get a babysitter. I mean, those shows add up if you are a couple with a baby.
That's just us getting old, though, isn't it?
No, but that's the demographic that's going to that show.
Well, I mean, you're right. Those are all, 30s and 40s and 50s. Right.
Those are the people who remember seeing the Unforgettable Fire Tour.
Sure, sure.
That want to relive that magic of stadium tours of the 80s mm-hmm. and early 90s.
Oh.
We can't recapture that because... Mm. You know, when you're paying $400, you don't feel as free and loose as you do when you bought a $25
right.
ticket to Unforgettable Fire.
It's kind of like when you buy the $50,000 car and the cigarette lighter doesn't work, you're pissed.
Yeah.
But if you buy an old truck for $1,000, if it just runs, you're happy. You're like, hey, I'm thrilled with this thing.
I don't care if the windows don't
go
up and down. It's only $1,000.
Well, let's change it. Let's jump to we're talking about Spotify, new music. You being someone who has how many lifetimes can you listen to music? Again,
oh,
or a year? No, what is it? What's the measurement?
You know, it was something like on iTunes. It tells you how many songs you have and how long you can listen. I have like 38,000 songs in iTunes or something.
Yeah,
you can listen to a new song 24 hours a day for it says like 444 days.
What
am I going to do? Sit at home and test that? You know?
Yeah, see if it's right.
I don't believe that. Let me sit here for 444 days.
Well, that's just timing. Simple math, Haggard. Simple math. Just add it on up. You know, the...
Spotify, you're saying.
Spotify. Les has been writing a lot about Spotify.
Any song you want, anytime.
Streaming. You don't own it.
Streaming. Don't own it.
So I want to get your perspective as the biggest music consumer in the world, going to 50-odd shows a year, who owns, 500 days of music. Where do you come down on? Do you have to own it? Or do you find yourself going to Spotify? Tell people what Spotify is.
Spotify, you can't get in the U.S. right now, or you can get it with some tricks, but it's in the U.K. and international mostly.
Right.
You sign up. A little program shows up on your computer. You say you want to hear Townes Van Zandt, something from Live at the Old Quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You type that in. It pops up. Play. It's streaming instantly on your computer. Any song. Well, not any. I think they have deals with three out of the four large media conglomerates, and they're working on getting
right.
the rest.
Right.
But basically, the first phase is have it on your desktop, whatever song you want to hear, whenever, just type it in and it plays. The next step is there's an iPhone application
mm-hmm.
Where you can just make a playlist on your desktop, and you can sync those songs. So those songs go from your desktop to your iPod. You can listen to them on the road.
Is that different from – how is that different from like Pandora and some other existing services?
Well, it's similar in a way. Pandora, you can't skip songs if
it stops you.
Yeah. If you get like, I don't know, if you get six Taylor Swift songs in a row and you want to hear something else, it won't let you skip. So,
right. We've had trouble on Pandora finding specific songs.
Well, you got to train Pandora.
I was looking for an old 97 song. And we kept trying different spellings, and it'd bring up,
Spotify, just type it in.
Yeah, that's it. And
done.
And then can you also set it up to where it plays, like, similar artists or something? Can you do all that kind of stuff?
You know, I only had a limited time working with the Spotify app. But, yeah, it's search for similar artists, search for compilation albums they're on. It's just whatever music you want whenever. And I start to think about how I consume music. And owning the CD was such... You had such a great shopping experience. You go to Waterloo or in Houston. I love
browse
the cactus.
Through the yes.
And you just
yes.
go, oh, there is. I remember when I found Phil World. I was like, oh, I think I found it at Waterloo. I was like, finally. I mean, I couldn't find this anywhere. I acquired this CD. I took it home. I had it. I read the liner notes. Looked at the great artwork inside it.
Standing on the world.
I said, this is great.
With the water coming off.
I worked so hard to find it, and now I own this physical possession.
Kind of like collecting baseball cards or something.
Yeah. And you flip it over and you look at it. Well,
sure.
I'm to the point now where I just want to hear something when I want to hear it, and I don't care about going out and number one, you can't go to a music store and find things anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Best Buy isn't selling CDs. So I've gotten to the point now where I go.
They don't anymore?
I don't think
at all,
so.
Barely,
I think they've gotten
bit.
Rid of
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I go to Amazon.com or iTunes, mostly Amazon.com because it's a unprotected MP3.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just buy the album for $7 and it downloads to your computer and instantly you're playing it. You don't need to go to the store. So you can act more impulsively. It's cheaper. And you don't have to, harm the earth by driving your car around to store to try and find it. So now I'm strictly in the digital world. And then I think to myself, well, Spotify, you know what? If I pay $10 a month, I have access to anything. I can put it on my iPod. What do I care if I even own the music?
Yeah.
I can listen to what I want, where I want, how I want.
It's just like, man, I just want
to listen to for
$10. I just want to listen to Lyle Lovett's first record all the way through. Have you ever heard that? Never heard it. You can just type it up, boom, and you're playing it.
And you know, I used to buy a CD for $20.
Mm-hmm.
Now for $10, I have access to every song instantly.
Lefsetz has said it since day one.
It's a no-brainer.
Since I started reading him years ago, the future is more for less. And as the labels tighten their grip, wanting to, as album sales declined, for a while they were raising their prices from like 16 to like 18 bucks a CD to the ones that were going to sell. And Lefsetz was like, man, they're going the wrong
direction. Or selling a digital download for 15.
Yeah, a digital download for 15. And he just goes, man, the future's going to be. And he made a very good comparison, I thought, to make it cheap enough where people won't steal. And his example was HBO. You're paying extra money for HBO to have HBO to watch The Sopranos or whatever. You know, this was back when he was writing. And he just said it's only $6 or $8 a month or something like that. It's cheap enough to where you can just get HBO if you want it. Now, true, someone could record The Sopranos and burn you a DVD. But if you keep going to that friend and saying, hey, I don't have HBO, man, can you burn me the DVD so I can just watch it without having to... Eventually that friend's going to go, look, man, it's $8. You know, for crying out loud, just get your own HBO. I mean, geez. You know, now if it was $50 a month, maybe they'd understand, you know. But as it got cheaper, it was just, it's easier for everybody to get what they need. And there's still money in it. There's still $8 for the HBO
guys.
Well,
that's what we went
like
through.
Like Spotify. Every single person in the world or music guy is going to chip in $9.99 a month to have access to any music he wants anywhere. Isn't he?
It's a no-brainer.
And now you say like, well, but you know, he's listening to 1,000 songs. See, I had to quit thinking like this with the drop card. You can't look at the drop card, every Phil Pritchard album, which you can get for $20. It's what is it now with Mark of the Human Hand on there?
11 albums on there, I think.
We got 13, 12 now with Mark of the Human Hand, I think.
Oh, yeah, 12, yeah.
So you're talking about over 120 songs. You can't. I can't just go, man, but that's $1 a song, man. So we're selling a drop card for $120. You have to take that thinking and just put it in the garbage. That's like saying a cell phone should cost, you know, $2,000 like it did in 1988. It just
things change.
Right, things change. It just the technology's different. It's easier. Everybody's got it. You just have to quit thinking with those old price structures.
Well, and that's what we went through in early 2007. We were trying to figure out what price do we charge for P2Tunes downloads.
That's right.
It's like
I'm used to selling my CDs for $10 or $15
versus someone ripping it off on BitTorrent, downloading your album for free.
For free.
So how do we?
Are they going to pay $15 or get it for free? You're like, dude, they're going to get it for free.
But maybe
they're not getting the actual CD. And we started to see that, man, who cares? I don't care. Do you care? Like, no, I don't. So it was a. So we came to. I'm trying to think how we came to $4.
Well, we came. We talked a lot about $5 because
yeah.
It was halfway between zero and ten.
Yeah.
So you know, $10 CD a show or whatever, and you thought let's split it down the middle, and then as an added incentive, I think you were saying we just want to get it to the fans.
Right.
Make it $4.
Mm-hmm.
And at $3, we started to feel like that's there is tremendous value to what you've created and put together. It's there's artistic value right. to that. You should be compensated. So. $2, $1, I think it's starting to, you know.
Yeah. Plus, there are some fees people should know. You know, when you do download one of our albums off P2Tunes for $4, there are some little transaction fees. There's a PayPal charge.
This might be 62 cents or
something. It comes out of my end. There's a couple little things that happen. It makes it not economically plausible to do per song downloads.
Right.
We can't because every transaction – is there's a fee
no matter how big a
transaction it is. You're transferring money on PayPal or whatever it is. So we just said, man, we got to stop at the album, just all 8, 9, 10, whatever, 14 songs at $4. And that was just sort of the round point.
Well, and our comparison was also iTunes, $1 for a song or $4 and get the whole album.
That's right.
Once again,
so it was still
no brainer. You know, you buy the whole album.
I always want everybody to feel like, man, if you go straight to Phil, it's always cheaper. And easier.
PhilPritchard.com, P2Tunes.com,
right.
P2Merch.com, and TrinidadWorldRecording.com.
If you come to me, it's always cheaper. Now, some people prefer iTunes. They get their iTunes. They get a
gift card
or something. So we still get a good deal of iTunes hits and purchases there as well, which is great.
But Spotify, who knows how? I don't know what the revenue.
But iTunes,
look like.
I don't affect. I cannot say, hey, don't charge 99 cents a song, charge 50 cents. I can't say that because they control that, which the major labels hate. But I don't care. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they can get it from me, you know, if they really want to get it for cheap. So you know. Well, much happening there. Do we need to own it? So what's going to happen when there's no more P2Tunes, no more iTunes? You can just get purchase stuff on Spotify. Do I get a check ever? I get like 4 pennies a month?
I don't know how that's going to work. You know, I got to think it's going to be similar to a radio type model where, you know, your song gets played, you get a royalty.
Just some, yeah. You,
I don't know
you
how
get
it's all
some credits
work. Yeah.
Somewhere and you were listened to 10,000 times in a month, so that equates to $281 yeah. and 10 cents. Something like, I mean, just something
like that. And
you'll
take it because that's the paradigm.
Something. It's something. Yeah.
But I think it's fascinating for consumers to think about, you know, at some point there'll be broadband in your car. So you'll just have Spotify or something similar in your car. Mm-hmm. And you'll speak into your, you know, a microphone in your car. Hey, put on Phil Pritchett, Mark of the Human Hand, and your car will instantly play that, streaming live.
Fascinating.
Boggles the mind. How do we stay ahead of that, Phil?
What do you think, Towns Van Zandt? I don't know the answer. We're trying to figure it out. That's why this podcast never ends. It just goes on because there really are no answers. Only more questions. But that's good. That's just fine with us. Well, you mentioned, do you think Towns Van Zandt would understand Spotify and how that all goes down?
Yeah, no.
No, Towns
not.
Not
at all.
Well, you know what? Towns Van Zandt, is there a more celebrated Texas songwriter, mythical cult figure than Towns Van Zandt?
You know, I think it all
of course, we got a lot of them down here.
It all goes back to him, I think. You know, I like to say it all goes back to Jerry Jeff.
Sure.
Some people say it goes back to Guy Clark, but I think it you know, they were all contemporaries, but I think people really learn from Towns. I think he
taught those guys a lot.
He taught those guys a lot.
Yeah, yeah, he did.
The songwriting craft and
well, the other day I watched is it Be Here to Love Me? The documentary on Towns Van Zandt. Includes a lot of some footage from Heartworn Highways and stuff. But it's really a documentary about the life of Towns Van Zandt. We're going to talk about the late, great Towns Van Zandt in the vault when we come back.
Why does she sing the sad songs? For me, I'm not the one to tenderly bring her soft sympathy. I've just begun to see my way clear, and it's plain if I stop, I will fall. I can lay down a tear for pain, just a tear, and that's all. What does she want me to do? She says that she knows that moments are rare. I suppose that it's true. Then on she goes to say I don't care. All she knows that I do. Maybe she just has to sing for the sake of the song.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchard here on the P2 podcast, sitting here with our web designer, our man of technological science. Kevin Haggard is here from Houston, Texas. Drove in to do the show today. Thanks so much for coming up.
Thanks. Your travel staff was very accommodating. I appreciate the help they gave me.
You need some more to stay tonight?
No, I think I'm good. They set me up on that, too.
You going to Dallas?
I don't know. Whatever your travel secretary set me up
with.
Good.
They got you up there.
I asked for the mansion. They didn't have a big enough room, so they Ritz-Carlton, I think.
Get the filet mignon at the mansion in the lobby.
That's what I'm looking forward
to. Send me the tab.
Yep.
Well, we were talking about the other day, Cameron Gott, a listener to the show, kid in Bryan College Station, sells the merch sometimes, and a frequent podcast contributor. We played a show down there at Zapato's all the night before Halloween. Oh, man. Wheels off. wheels off. We thought it was going to rain. We get there. All the lights are off. The lights don't work. It's a blackout in Northgate and College Station.
Which doesn't necessarily mean that there's been a bad weather.
Everyone's just going about their business.
Yeah.
So we set up. Do we just set up in the dark? Because I don't want the lights to come on at 10 o'clock and be like, oh, crap, we hadn't set up one thing. So we got set up, and the great Nick Verzosa of John's Guns opened for us. His buddy Sean helped with the sound. We had a whole crew in there working, and sure enough, the lights did come back on. The weather held off. Oh, man, it was great. Some people were in costumes. There was a couple guys there in Pamplona whites with the red bandanas. A couple guys had on their bullfighter regalia for the show. How about that?
Anybody dress as Lynch or Staley?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
A couple A&M football guys and shoulder pads. Some funny people walking around. It was a scene. It was really, really great. And, man, just a wild show. Packed to the gills out there, man, at Zapata's. Just really, really great. So, but Cameron was there. Cameron got, he hands me a DVD for Be Here to Love Me, the Townes Van Zandt deal. Of course, I've always been fascinated with Townes Van Zandt, any singer-songwriter. But I always confessed, I never just delved into his music. Of course, I know his hits, you know, that he'd written for other guys. And I really started listening, you know, like Flying Shoes, Lungs, stuff that was on that Lyle Lovett deal, that I couldn't believe how great the songs were, that I did go look up, and I was like, oh, that's a town song. Wow.
I mean, dude. If I Needed You.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just, he, it's shocking how many he's got for other guys that he's written. And, of course, his own life, his own albums, his own tours and shows. Very spotty. So here in the vault today, we're not going to try to talk about one town's album, because it's pretty difficult to do. There's a lot of bootlegs.
You can't pick one.
Inconsistency. You can't. I mean, some of his early recordings in the 60s when he got going were unapologetically later on by his producers claimed to be overproduced, trying to make him sound more like... I don't know, Ray Price.
Well,
he
just didn't care about the recording process.
He just wrote the songs. That's right.
He just wrote the songs.
He wasn't really a singer or recordist in the way that a lot of other guys were. He was the songwriter. So you kind of, the songs really came to life when other people did them. His shows, a lot of times he'd be too drunk to, you know.
Well, I think it was, they come to life.
They come and go.
Yeah, they come. I think they come to life to fans in the way that other people record them. Willie Nelson, Poncho, and Merle Haggard.
Yeah, it's presented.
And that's where I think you first hear it. But if you hear that song and you go, I got to find out who wrote it.
And then you dive into Towns. Oh, it's amazing.
It's moving.
No question. Yeah, I think it is hard to wade right into Towns Van Zandt and watch him sit on a stool and sing those songs. You're kind of like, man, this is pretty dark. This is the same thing. But to have that backdrop of those hits, and then you go back and hear him do his versions of the original songs, Lungs, Waiting Around to Die.
In time periods where he was doing well,
right,
you know, emotionally, not under influences, I think those can be some of the most moving performances, to hear him really pour his heart into his songs.
That's right. That's right. So really this part of the vault, we're not talking specifically about, we've talked about movies in the vault before.
Yep.
This is Spinal Tap, The Last Waltz. I would highly recommend this I'll Be Here to Love Me documentary about Towns Van Zandt. Very great. You got interviews from Steve Earle in there, Guy Clark, Jerry Jeff, your boy, makes an appearance in there, and Emmylou Harris, on and on, talking about Towns and his life, and it's just fascinating. Towns Van Zandt being a born of privilege and wealth.
Fort Worth singer-songwriter.
Texas. Yes, this is where all the great ones come from, right here. T-Bone Burnett, Phil Pritchett, etc. Towns, born in Fort Worth, born to an oil family. Van Zandt County here is named after his family.
Correct.
Very high privilege, a great athlete as a kid, handsome, popular.
He was smart. He actually had a genius IQ.
A genius IQ.
His SAT scores were 1120.
That's right, yes.
He was a very smart individual. I think at one point he was accepted into law school.
That's right,
His parents wanted to put him in law school.
Somewhere he discovered the booze.
Well, I think the first thing that kind of went downhill for him was he was put in the hospital in Galveston and given some
Well, he was already, according to the film, he started kind of playing guitar. He'd gotten married.
Yep.
Gotten married.
Early, yeah.
His parents bought him a nice apartment and everything. He said they paid for everything. I mean, he had his nice wife and a dog and a nice apartment. But Towns started really getting into music, really practicing his guitar, had a hard time finding his feet in the business world, and was showing some promise as a songwriter, and started partying,
drinking
his ass off,
depression.
And they said one night, after a wild, yet another wild night, knock on the door, Mr. and Mrs. Van Zandt, and took Towns away and took him to a mental hospital
in Galveston,
where he was subjected to insulin shock therapy.
3 months of insulin shock therapy.
Where you're basically in a coma or something. It just knocks you out. I mean, it erases your memory, or parts of your brain are erased.
Yep.
Man, I was horrified and shocked. I didn't realize the depth of this. There was a similar story with Rocky Erickson, lead singer of the 13th Floor Elevators. I don't know if he did insulin. I know he did maybe shock.
That was
because, blow over the cuckoo's nest.
That was because he smoked one joint or something, and they threw him in jail
for
that.
Parents freaked out. Yeah. So it was kind of the same thing. This was probably around the same time where this was the cutting edge way to treat guys who like to just do drugs and party.
Let that be a lesson to our kids.
Yeah, let that be a lesson to all of you out there. So Towns emerged from this. God, they said that they had to say, now this woman coming in is your mother. And they had to tell him this stuff, man, because his parts of his whole life were erased in his brain. And so anyway, Towns goes back to playing guitar and
in
just drinking in Houston and playing gigs and writing songs, and falls in with other Texas songwriter greats.
Guy Clark, Jerry Jeff,
and Rodney Crowell, Steve
Earle.
Very
influenced by Lightning Hopkins.
Yeah.
That was
old Texas blues greats. Loved Lightning Hopkins.
And they felt he was a kindred spirit, I think, and he very much learned at their feet and
was
very observant.
Well, so Towns, to kind of, it's hard to sum up his life, man. There's that story where he was at a party. I don't know if this was before shock therapy or not, maybe before, but he was at a party and he was on a fourth floor balcony. And there's an interview where he says, yeah, man, I just wanted to feel what it felt like to fall. And so I kept leaning further and further out, and I realized, you know, for me to get the full effect, I'm just going to have to go all the way off. He said he just leaned further back till he just fell off this off this balcony. Just fell four stories, landed flat on his back. It's almost a metaphor for his whole life. He said, I couldn't look at a bottle of whiskey. I just have to sit there till it was dry. I just would say, man, this is what has to be done. And or falling off the balcony.
To live is to fly.
To live is to fly, you know, and that woman talked about first time she ever saw anybody using needles and shooting up. It was Towns and his girlfriend. He said, and what they were shooting was bourbon and coke into their veins. She's like,
way
so,
before Nikki Sixx
she's
even
like,
started.
She's like, so go figure. I'm like, so very depressing. But against all this is those songs, man. Waiting Around to Die.
For the Sake of the Song.
For the Sake of the Song.
Tecumseh Valley, Poncho and Lefty.
Lungs. What are some other... Flying Shoes.
We got Waiting Around to Die. What else do we get?
Oh, man. The greatest quote of the whole film is at the end at Towns' funeral. He died of heart failure in 1997.
January 1st.
New Year's Day.
Same day as Hank Williams.
That's right. That's right. They had a funeral, so they show a lot of Lovett playing My Flying Shoes, My Flying Shoes at the funeral. And then Guy Clark gets up there and has the best line in the whole movie at Towns' funeral. He says, he puts the capo on. He goes, well, I don't know if I can get through this. And it's very emotional. And then Clark says, but I booked this gig 30 years ago. And everybody just started dying laughing. That was just he knew that was the contract he made by being Towns Van Zandt's great friend those 30 years ago that, you know, that this day would come where he would have to get up at this guy's funeral.
Right.
That would come all too soon. He was 52 years old. And try to get through a few of his songs. The Clark's just like, hey, I'm here to own up to my end of the bargain. Here I am. I booked this thing 30 years ago. Only a songwriter could say that with that kind of class and humor and something that just encapsulated probably their friendship for the last 30 years. I thought that was a great part of the movie.
Yeah.
But a lot of interviews with Clark on there. Boy, how about Guy and Susanna Clark on that film? Boy, she was a beauty back then.
Yeah.
Holy cow. They were showing old pictures.
We can tie it all back to Jerry Jeff here quickly. San Antonio Rose, written by her on one of Jerry Jeff's early albums. I think she duets.
Was she a big songwriter at the time?
Yeah.
I didn't know her stuff as much.
I think she did some songwriting, but just a great voice as well.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very talented musical group of individuals that kind of circulated around town.
So all found each other. Yeah.
Susanna, Steve Earle.
Right. Earle was young. Heartworn Highway is in another Towns movie featuring all these people. Earl was a kid. He was like 17, wasn't he, or something?
Yeah. Rodney Crowell was part of that crowd
as well. Rodney Crowell, yeah. Houston kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think what struck me about the movie was just the profound sadness. The sense that a guy like Van Zandt, he just carried the world on his shoulders, you know? Without any regard, there's one interview where he says, "I just realized this life, to do it like I wanted to do it, man, you just had to blow everything off, you know, family, friends, money, security, everything. Just blow it off. You just don't worry about tomorrow. Just live every day with your guitar, have fun, stay up all night." That kind of ethos was how he needed to live in order to work like he wanted to work.
Which is interesting. You think, you know, you take paths in life. And there he was, genius level IQ, great SATs, accepted into law school. You know, at some point this guy goes, "Well, I'm not going to be the straight and narrow lawyer in downtown Houston working on oil and gas deals. I'm going to be a tortured soul with a message I have to deliver to people. Mm-hmm. And whatever, you know, state of mind I need to be in to deliver that, I'm going to get to that."
Right.
And that's gambling, drinking, drugs, abandoning friends, abandoning possessions. That was what he needed to do. And the question that, you know, we were talking about earlier before the podcast, is that a successful life?
Yeah.
He delivered great songs, great messages that have moved a lot of people.
Sure.
That was what he wanted to do. So is that a successful life?
Well, you would say maybe perhaps that part of it, yes.
Yeah.
I guess you'd look at maybe his three wives and all of his kids and the pain he caused them by being absent and... cruel,
yeah.
That would be maybe somewhere where he came up short. You could make that argument.
Yeah.
You know, there's a price. Like you said, you did blow it off. It was a choice, just like he said.
If you strip out what's the greater good to society, you know,
right.
If you look at it totally, you know, without any sensitivity towards his family,
right.
And say, so he abandoned 5, 6, you know, he had good relationships at certain times.
That's only 10 people he pissed off.
Everyone else got a message from a great singer-songwriter.
That's right.
You know.
Well, sure. I mean, there's no question that his music and his was very successful. There's really no denying that at all. I do think, and I think anyone's like that. I mean, I think Brett Favre, you know, is thrilled millions. But I think, you know, probably if you took his wife aside or his kids and said, "Hey, how has his greatness affected you?" There'd be some, maybe not an overwhelming, that they would say, "Well, yeah, it was great and it was cool, but there probably were some things inevitable that you're like, well, he was gone a lot or he was, you know, hard to talk to, whatever." Maybe that's part of it. It's a burden, man, to do that kind of work, to follow that kind of life. Not really unlike someone with a lot of promise becoming a traveling preacher or a teacher in a sixth grade public school somewhere, but just had a passion and felt like he could reach a few kids. It's a vocation, you know, and you're not in it for the money. You're not, so you're kind of like, well, why is he in it? And you're like, he just has to do it, you know. Why does that guy teaching math?
You're hitting home here. Why do you choose to do what you do?
Right, right.
Do you choose to do it for money, or you choose to do it because you truly love to do it?
Well,
they hope the two join hands at some point.
Well, is interesting about Towns Van Zandt is that you do. I think his life and his music really goes around and around that issue, a life of privilege starting out, and then kind of where he ended up. And you're kind of, well, did he go the wrong way, or did he do the wrong thing? You're like, well, certainly not. He's written all these great songs, so it couldn't have been the wrong way. And you're like, man, but he lived a rough life. He had tremendous difficulty with his day to day health, his life, his relationships with the people. But here's all this music. It is a tough thing to get your head around. A lot tougher than, say, the life of you know, someone who becomes president of the United States, or something. Or, you know, something to where that there's a progression of greatness, you know, until they get to the highest level that they've always aspired to be. There's an ambiguity in art with Towns, you know. You know, I see it in my own career, you know. You get to where you feel like you're at a certain level or something, or a plateau, or, man, we do great in this town or at this venue or something, and the venue closes, or, you know, some of those kids moved away, or, and you go back and there's 10 people again, and you're, you know, they've never heard the old albums, and you're just, right. They know your new album, and you're like, well, this is weird, how do I, you're always, it's a very ambiguous, you're not on a, you're not playing Chutes and Ladders, you know, where you get to 100 and you win. You're just sort of darting all over the board, you know. Life's more like a Monopoly game or something, you know. Everywhere you stop, you have to pay somebody money. And there's no win end of the game, is there?
No.
Maybe Towns would agree with that. No?
I don't know. An enigma wrapped inside a puzzle, wrapped inside a great songwriter.
Yeah, absolutely. The late, great Towns Van Zandt. Kevin gave me one of his albums, just the Towns Van Zandt album with For the Sake of the Song, Waiting Around to Die, Lungs. God, what a heavy hitting, man. Oh,
check it
gosh.
Out. You know, if you want a good sampler, Towns' anthology. I think it's from kind of his great period of songwriting. It's called Anthology. I think it's 1968 to 1973.
Yeah.
Just a great period of songwriting. Highly recommend you check that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kevin Haggard, thank you so much for being here on the podcast.
Phil, this is a pleasure.
Making the trip from Houston, Texas to be with us today. Perhaps you'll stick around.
Might just do that next week. I'll drive back up.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. I look forward to that. We'll have numerous new topics then, ladies and gentlemen. Make no mistake. Well, go to that oft-talked-about website, p2tunes.com, to download the brand-new Phil Pritchett and Full Band album.
Don't forget P2 merch.
P2 merch. Oh, man, we're going to have the new...
new T-shirts.
Fans, Romans, Countrymen T-shirt. It's got the Roman helmet on it. Fans, Romans, Countrymen, lend me your ears. It's going to be up there very, very soon. We'll have all sizes. First come, first serve, as always, on the sizes. So send in those orders. You just click, and I mail them right out.
Subscribe
no
to Phil on Twitter. Join MySpace. Go to archive.org.
Listen to this guy. Listen to this guy.
They're all out there. PhilPritchett.com. Click
They're
on the homepage.
Keep up with what's going on. Let people know that you are in the know. You are part of a very special family that knows what's going on, man. Thank you for listening out there on RadioFreeTexas.org and PhilPritchett.com. So, for Kevin Haggard, I am P2 Phil Pritchett, signing off on this edition of the podcast. We'll see you next week.
Sometimes I don't know where this dirty road is taking me. Sometimes I don't even know the reason why. But I guess I keep a gambling, lots of booze and lots of rambling. Well, it's easier than just a waiting around to die. All one time, friends, I had a ma, even had a pa. Well, he beat her with a belt once, 'cause she cried. She told him to take care of me, headed down to Tennessee. Well, it's easier than just a waiting around to die. I came of age and I found a girl in a Tuscaloosa bar. Oh, she cleaned me out and hit it on the sly. Well, I tried to kill the pain, I bought some wine and hopped a train. Seemed easier than just a waiting around to die. Then a friend said he knew where some easy money was. We robbed a man and brother, did we fly. Posse caught up with me and drug me back to Muskogee. And it's 2 long years of waiting around to die. Oh, but now I'm out of prison, I got me a friend at last. He don't drink or steal or cheat or lie. Oh, his name's Codeine, he's he's the nicest thing I've seen. Well, together we're gonna wait around and die. Yeah, together we're gonna wait around and die.